vacant here by says Department of Public Works, which no longer exists. And we have some of the, so we assume revising this and having a draft back to the committee to look at.
Yes, well, I approve of the concept, and I did notice that on APW, but that's a mechanical change, right?
Let me ask you one question.
Yes, sir.
Former superintendent, and you ought to be able to tell us the best of all possible answers, shouldn't you, Senator Buckley? Senator Clatter raised, we had some discussion about using the present as a dollar figure, and everything above that is not preventive maintenance, but is major maintenance, right? It's a dollar cutoff now that you're thinking about. Senator Clatter, I believe, was suggesting that the difference between preventive maintenance and, shall we say, major maintenance should be on what you're doing rather than the amount of money. Am I quoting you right there?
You're right.
What would you?
Well, I was trying to think how we did a maintenance.
You've been a superintendent for a long time.
We had capital projects, and when you first got your building, you bought as much as you could under capital. And then after that, it came out of our operational budget. If we wished to paint a room or do minor thing, and it could be, it becomes marginal when you try to describe sometime what it's really a capital improvement or it's operational. And you can set it by dollar. It might be more difficult. It's easier that way, probably. Probably easier to set it by dollar.
But what I see happening when you set a dollar value, Joe, is abuse.
You just reduce the size of the project or increase the size of the project until you've got it in the category you want it. Absolutely right.
So why not make application for the grant if you don't mm-hmm. have the money to repair it before you do more damage?
Mm-hmm.
I can
mm-hmm.
see mm-hmm. a heating system become totally inoperative, destroyed.
Right, that is right.
Because they don't have to go to fix it. And we're going to replace the heating system at West High.
Mm-hmm.
God, I looked at that number, I couldn't believe it. $1,450,000.
I think the building only cost about $7 when we built it, but that was 30 years ago. So it's been heating the building for 30 years.
So as long as you have to apply for the money anyway, mm-hmm. why not apply for it under the circumstances that occur regardless mm-hmm. of its cost?
Mm-hmm. Because it varies so much.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, and because then you'd be doing preventive maintenance.
That's right.
Not waiting
totally.
Until
yes.
after
yes.
the
So
yes.
you got a few
sure.
tiles off the roof. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll wait until some more blow off and we'll get a grant.
Well, this is what makes everything, you know, so difficult or different. In operating the RAA school districts, you have such a wide difference. In Anchorage, we have 60-some-odd schools, and we could set some standards, you know, that you could honestly measure and then give the responsibility to the principal, and then you could operate within those, like on purchasing of books, supplies. It'd be an allocation right to the penny. And then they would age, and it was on a scheduled year basis. But when you have if you have an old building and you have a new building, you know, it's impossible to equate it by dollars. And it's the same by teachers. You know, you have 10 teachers at this school, 10 teachers at this school, and the difference can be a double.
And like you're saying, location, and we don't know.
No.
What might be a $18,000 job in Hooper Bay, given its climatic conditions? Doesn't qualify, you better as hell fix
true.
It.
True.
You can't afford to wait like it was in Fairbanks or in Juneau.
True. Well, I don't know the total answers, but I know those 21 districts, and they have such a wide difference. You know, some will have some new buildings, and some will have all old, and some the oil. As I said, it'll be 20 times more to keep a boy or girl warm there than it is in Anchorage. Well, that's why that 55% rule that was put in on SB 23 was really a fallacy. I knew it wasn't put in. It was it's nothing.
Yeah.
It's a little creative accounting. You can get around it. But you have to keep the building warm, and you have to do certain things. And then I think that portion the state should pay, and then it could be some small portions that would be elective. But I know that some of our schools are underfunded, and I suspect, I'll have to be honest, that some of them probably are a little fat. And being fair, I think the advantage of the oversight committee in our 2 years that we operated, or at least I felt it was an advantage, we were not resented by more than three, four of the fellows, I guess, two or three of them maybe, was all. Would you say, Nels? And that it gave the six legislators really an insight as to the schools and the differences. And we had, it took us a week, 6 days each time, solid, 8 hours a day. And we've been, but that is not the solution. It familiarized us with those things. But Marsha Lynn's staff and Steve Hole and those guys, they have been out in those districts, some of them for 10 years. They're as familiar with that as I am at Turnington or North Star. You know, I know the school from my office. You know it. And that's why I think to have, he has the administrative organization, I think, to do this. And I'm sure Steve and Marshall wouldn't like me saying this. They know I'm going to say it. So, but I think that they know it better than any other person. And if they're subject to pressures, we all are, aren't we? But someone should, when I came here 4 years ago, I could not believe when the budget came before the Finance Committee, I said, who is recommending this? It was no, you probably remember it. And I couldn't believe it. Some of our legislators at that time did not know that those rural REA budgets had not been approved at the department level. Leo didn't know it. Leo thought it was approved when it came over. But there's a wide gap. So you have an REA board that's elected. There's no control over it. The only control is the formula, and that means nothing. But I think with a survey by the commissioner and his staff of those budgets, and he knows whether that's fat, skinny, or about right, then he should come to that finance committee and with those 21 budgets and say, here's our 21 schools, and we want $262 million or whatever it is, and then we could challenge it, question it, and approve it with confidence.
Mr. Chairman, well, I was a member of the committee for a year, and we wrestled with how to put on another layer of review,
yeah,
without engaging. I mean, just stopping the legislature. I mean, we'd have to do it. We're the logical, as we're the assembly of the unorganized, we're the logical people to go through the full survey. But we went through days and days and days, eight, nine hours a day, going through these budgets, and I'll tell you, it was a real, just a real exercise. And a lot of things came out of that review that you mentioned, that the disparities, the differences, and came up with some solutions. One thing we didn't agree on in the first year, and when I got out, was how to develop this. And apparently, you people have come up with this recommendation for another level of review. And I do approve of it because I really believe strongly, Mr. Chairman, that there has to be another level of review. What good will it do? It's a good question. What I think the good it will do will be that it will point some things out to us that may need some correction. It also will, I think, give us an additional feeling of maybe not total security, but at least some, that someone more competent, or not necessarily competent, but more familiar with the situation is there looking at the budget, that knows it better than I could. I'd feel more comfortable if there was another level. I don't know if this is the answer, but it seems to have some merit at this point unless we come up with something better.
People would be a little cautious.
Well, the six was gone.
Oh, it was you guys.
There was the REA Oversight Committee.
Yeah.
And we really had no authority to do anything other than
the REA boards would be a little more cautious.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Budget.
Oh, yeah, because these guys, Department of Education, knows it. But they could get away with stuff with the REA Oversight Committee, perhaps.
They were in.
They wouldn't catch
whatever
it.
They put was what we get.
But see, that's the fallacy. The I didn't like to go to Burr Assembly every year in Anchorage, but I knew I had to. And I wouldn't dare tell them that I didn't have a faucet on the north side of North Star. I'd be thumped on the head. They'd been over there the day before. They'd say, there is a faucet over there, Mr. Montgomery. You know, they knew the thing. But it's impossible for us to deal with this. I don't think it would take additional staff. I think that a person, you take a team of two people, and where you know the schools,
I used to do 62 budgets myself. I went through 62 budgets. Had over $100 million a year as superintendent. And and you can...
How many people did you have and how long did it take, Joe?
Well, I'm trying to think. We started our budgets in about October, November every year. Just as soon as you got the school year started, I always carried two or three folders, and then if I didn't get something 1 year as a principal, I'd put it in the next year, you know, and you'd work. And then we would ask that those budgets would come in about December from the principals. And then as we got larger, I did have an elementary fellow would sit, and I would sit with him, and we'd go over those budgets. The elementary school, you might, if it was well organized and you had a good principal, you could do it in an hour.
If I recall correctly, when we were going through the review process, wasn't there someone from the department going through the whole thing, monitoring what we were doing as well?
Yes.
Wasn't there a lady there? I forget her name, but there was somebody
Mrs. Madden, Mary Lou Madden.
I think so. But anyway, they were helping us, you know, giving us some insights about what some of the questions were that were raised there, and they had the answers. And they obviously knew everything there was to know about whatever questions I had, so it didn't appear to be, it wouldn't appear to me to be an additional burden since they're out there meeting with these people all the time.
That's right. No, but that's their job, curriculum-wise and otherwise, with the PALA programs. They have to cover those districts, and they are there. And Mary Lou Madden is one of Dr. Lynn's top people. And she and Steve Hole here, and there's a few more of them, have been here for a long time. They know the schools, they know the towns, they know the people. And they really know whether it's real bad or not so bad. And it would seem to me, with that knowledge of those 21 districts, that's a responsibility that he could come before a finance committee and say, hey, man, here's what we need. And if any one of us wanted to challenge a particular district, we'd challenge him. Say, Marshall, how about such and such a district? How about Lower Kuskokwim? You're putting too much in here or whatever. And he should be able to tell you, just like I could tell you about Turnagain and North Star, you know. But we don't know that as legislators. So we've eliminated, from all practical purposes, the problem. They've tried to solve it by this formula, and the formula was based 10 years ago on city school districts. Now, it's off also for cities. It's not perfect on that, but it doesn't anywhere get close to meeting the need. And all they did, Charlie, in many ways, was take the need, what they needed, and then divide it to see what the area differential to give them to make the thing balance. It's a... you know that too. It means nothing. The formula means nothing for the area, the REAs. Absolutely nothing. I take those 21 districts and I look at their budget, and I'd come in and I'd say, Lower Kuskokwim needs $7,252,000 bucks, and here's why. And I'd have 21 of those, and I'd sell every damn one of them, because I'd have it.
And somebody else might need a little less.
That's over or under.
Just as you had to do in the district.
Absolutely. Over or under. Yes. But you had people who were knowledge. It's like your borough assembly in Fairbanks or Anchorage. See, they know the schools and they know where it is. But we're too far from it.
I guess all I can say is that I think you're much more optimistic about what the department will do than I am.
Well,
I've been here 8 years and I've dealt with the department. I was a member of the House Committee for 6.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I'm not as optimistic as you are.
Well, it's. I think it's the way it should be done. You know, I shouldn't. I think they have the capabilities of doing it. They have the capabilities, and if they're directed to do it, I think it's the only way I know without putting on a whole new layer of fat. And I don't want a REA oversight committee to be on a 12-month job. I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. You don't want that. But you have the natural, you have the paid employee here who's working 12 months.
Yeah.
You got them on the job. They know they're out there. So that's the commissioner or the assistant commissioner's job to assign people to go out there and find the loopholes, and he or she should come in here. And I don't think it should be far better than what we have now.
I think it should be far better.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think one of the good things that happened was that, first of all, the creation of that oversight committee, and then one of the things that we found, you know, or found a lot of things that were wrong, as a matter of fact. This recommendation, I think, is a good one, which will, in effect, help the legislature, I think.
Yeah. Well, maybe it was a slight, sort of a side issue, but last year when the resolution came through to continue the oversight committee, I had no objections to that, but I didn't really think we were getting very much out of the committee. At least I hadn't been able to see much results. So we put in three things we asked the oversight committee to report to the legislature on this year. And it's unfortunate, in my view, that we didn't get the answers to those three questions, really. One was whether the kind of thing that was revealed in that special audit last year was happening in a whole flock of REAAs. We didn't get the answer. Another one was the extent to which teacher turnover in the bush was affecting the education of the kids. And the third one was whether the small high schools were able to give an adequate education. Now one of those was a fiscal question. The other two aimed at the quality of education in those REAAs. And I'm not saying that the oversight committee could have done a better job. I wasn't on that committee. They had to deal with what they had to do. But here are some things that I think legislature kind of decided it was okay, because they kept those in when the resolution passed last year to extend the committee. But we didn't get the answers to those questions. No.
But those are always
the most important question in some ways is, you know, are those high schools giving those kids an adequate education? That question is not answered.
But those questions are always
the question the oversight committee. I'd much rather see them spending their time on than they went on the money. Hell, money is a tool you use. You don't want to waste it, but it's a tool. What really counts, what results are we getting? Are we shortchanging some of those kids because of any small high school? But I think those are more important questions in some ways than just, you know, following up on the budgets or the condition of the school buildings or something.
Chairman, well, I got to go. Thank you,
Jerry. Thank you very much for coming down.
You bet.
Sorry.
On federal block grants, present today and chairing today's meeting is Senator Parr and various agency and departmental representatives, including Commissioner Byrne. With that, we will have a short presentation on federal block grants, and then we'll be taking testimony from around the various sites.
This is Senator Parr. We welcome all of you to the teleconference today. We'll begin with a brief presentation on the block grants. Commissioner Byrne and members of her staff will give you that, and after that we're ready to take any comments or questions anyone may have. With that, I'd like to turn the mic over to Commissioner Helen Byrne, Health and Social Services.
Thank you, Senator Parr. I want to express the department's appreciation for your taking on this responsibility of a statewide hearing on the block grants. What I would like to do is take just a very brief moment just to indicate that we have with us here today a number of people from our department, and as you know, it is quite large, and these block grants fall over actually four divisions. We have those people here today who can answer your questions very specifically. I'm going to make just some rather broad comments here in terms of the figures that we're dealing with, and then John Tabor, who is actually our block grant expert. He is the person we have brought online to deal particularly with the things that are coming out of the federal mandates, and that would be the block grants, new federalism, and other things that all of you are probably familiar with. He will be giving then a very short description of what the block grant actually means and how it is implemented. Following that, we will have an overview of the various grants from each of the divisions that are most involved with them. Lois Bergeson, who is the chief of the nursing division, Division of Public Health, will review the maternal and child health block grants, and also the preventive health and health services block grants. Dr. Robert Marshall, who is the director of the Division of Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities, will review the mental health block grants. George Mundell. George is still going to do it. I see Mr. Cole is also here, who's director of the Office of Alcoholism. They will be reviewing the Alcoholism and Drug Abuse Block Grants. And Judy Walker, from the Assistant Director, Division of Public Assistance, will be reviewing the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Block Grant. I'm just going to toss out just a couple of figures to set the stage and then let John Tabor move on into some of the other things that we should be talking about. It appears that in FY83, the department will realize probably about $7.5 million in block grants. It also appears, and when I say appear, it's very difficult to get the rounded figures at this time, or even these are good ballpark figures as near as we can tell. It appears that we will have lost from the 1981 FY budget $5,400,000. So we really are significantly lower than we were in 81, even at this point. There also will be about $2,900,000 that will not go through our department, but will go directly to Native corporations, or such as to the Anchorage Community Health Program. So those are the figures we're dealing with. We're dealing with roughly $7,500,000 we will receive in 83, which is roughly $5,500,000 less than we received in 81, and roughly $2,900,000 that will not go through our department at all, but go to other areas. Now, with that, I'm going to turn over to the other people, and as Senator Parr wishes them to talk, and then we will all be here and available for questions after their review of their particular block grants are complete. Thank you, Senator Parr.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Taylor.
Thank you, Senator Parr. This is John Tabor, Block Grant Administrator for the Department. The Commissioner has just given you numbers and general figures that relate to the block grant programs that we are here to discuss today. As most of you undoubtedly know, when Congress created the block grant programs last summer, a number of programs were created, approximately a total of nine block grant programs actually were created. Not all of those are administered by the Department of Health and Social Services, and we're only here to talk about the ones that are. And further, one of those block grants, the Social Services block grant, is not on our agenda for today. It'll be dealt with in a separate teleconference that the Division of Family and Youth Services will be sponsoring. So those numbers are not included in the figures that the Commissioner gave you and will not be part of our discussion today unless questions come in on those points. At the time that Congress created the block grant programs, what they did in order to create block grants was to combine a number of so-called categorical grant programs that had previously been administered by the federal government. The majority of those programs, as they affect the state of Alaska, were already administered by the state of Alaska under existing grant and in-house administrative type programs. Therefore, in a very substantial measure, the impact of block granting on the state of Alaska immediately was not great in a programmatic sense. That is, we don't have a bunch of new programs to administer. We don't have a bunch of new money coming into the state that we did not receive before. The one notable exception to that is in the alcohol and drug abuse and mental health block, which will be discussed later. The main point that I want to make about the size of the block grants is that while Congress lumped together a great many programs, and indeed of the four block grants that we're here to discuss today, some 24 previously existing programs were combined into these four block grants. Many of those programs did not have operating projects in the state of Alaska. And therefore, since no funding was provided for programs that did not previously exist in the state under federal funding, the state of Alaska received only funding that would support ongoing programs. In addition, the President and Congress, through various budget initiatives, reduced total funding in the amounts that the Commissioner indicated to you for all of the grants, so that not only are we dealing with a limited number of programs, but we are dealing with a much smaller amount of money, down approximately 30% for the programs that we have. Therefore, the objective of the state has been to try to live within the new budget figures that the federal government has in effect placed upon us by reducing total funding for these blocks. And that has been our mandate. Now, further mandate, and the reason for this teleconference, is that the Congress required, for certain of the block grants, that legislative hearings be held. The purpose of that was to obtain public participation in the decision-making process for the use of the funds. And our purpose here today is to explain to you the uses that we project and to obtain comments of the public on those uses. With those preliminary comments, I'd like to turn the microphone over to Lois Bergerson, with Senator Parr's permission, and we'll move directly into the analysis of each of the individual block grants and the manner in which the state plans to spend those funds.
Thank you, Senator Parr. This is Lois Bergerson. I'm chief for the section of nursing. I'm also representing Dr. Rabeau, who happens to be out of town right now. And the first group of block grants I will give you a brief summary on are the ones that have been in progress during 1982. And then I will proceed to the ones we hope to have in 1983. You realize that budget has not been settled, either state or federal, as yet. So that's only a hopeful portion that I'll be able to give you. I'll just give you a quick summary. In the block grants, they have been used for expansion of hypertension screening program. The public health nurses provide preventative health services for at-risk groups associated with hypertension. The services that have been provided have been increased in some of the urban and rural communities throughout the state. Examples of some of these services are hypertensive screening, referral, follow-up, and then a continued surveillance in connection with the private providers in the sites that the hypertension programs have provided. We've also used some of the preventative block grants to maintain the current level of the venereal disease program and the screening program, and it could be called either venereal disease or sexually transmitted diseases. It's been also the having clinics at different sites throughout the state where we have identified the cases, where we've done the follow-up of the cases, and then done the surveillance and possibly the treatment. Along with this, the sexually transmitted disease program has also provided the providers. That means that some of the doctors that some of the people may utilize with the latest information on the treatment of sexually transmitted diseases, and also with some late information on the diagnosis and identification of these diseases. As you know, the Division of Health also is responsible for emergency medical program, which assists in training and helps local communities and institutions to develop training programs for citizens in first aids and in cardiac pulmonary resuscitation. And also that this department, or this division in emergency medical services, is charged with the development of standards and certification program. So some of the block grant monies were used to develop these standards. They were also used to purchase equipment such as, it's interesting because thermometers to test individuals whether they have hypothermia or not are not found in this country. And so EMS used quite a bit of the funds to purchase 825 of these thermometers, which I understand were purchased in England. And we do have hypothermia in Alaska, so this is a very good preventative measure. Then the EMS also used some of their monies for training materials for individuals that work for EMS or for individuals that want to take the courses throughout the state and for certification. This year, some of the funds were also used to coordinate with the public safety for existing rape crisis programs and rape crisis centers. Then a new program was sort of started in conjunction with the Alaska Native Health Service, and that was the fluoride of water. And the money goes directly to Alaska Native Health Service, who trained different individuals throughout the state, operators at places where they have a water supply to use, to put fluoride in. Then also the Tanana Chiefs received some of those monies. Now, in the proposed block grant in 1983, the division hopes to use a great deal of the money as a contract in health education for youth groups and other smaller groups that are using for risk reasons, and that would be poor nutrition, that would also be for alcohol, drugs, smoking, and for stress-oriented illness. And also they will continue to use the preventative health grants for rape, and also some of them will come to nursing. Now, in the latter portion of my presentation, I would like to talk about the maternal and child health block grant, which is one of the largest proportions that is given to the Division of Health. These monies are used for metabolic screening for newborns. The money is also used for pregnancy tests. And then a large portion of it is used for the Handicapped Children's Program, which benefits individuals. These are individuals that have handicaps because of injury or birth defects, or they accumulate one during their between the years of 0 to 21. And the services are located throughout the state. Individuals are referred to private providers such as neurologists, orthopedics, special audiologists, and so forth, to have their handicaps either taken care of to a resolution or so that they can lead a reasonably productive life. The other portion of the MCH block grant is used for audiologists that go around the state and do specific special hearing tests and also fit different types of audiology to help people improve their hearing. The other services in the MCH block grant are child development services. These are complex medical children that have learning disabilities, and these are used in 15 different communities throughout the state. Then also the block grant comes to the section of nursing that uses their maternal and child health funds for their preventative health services for families in the childbearing age and at-risk groups associated with handicapped conditions. Examples of this might be immunizations, including tuberculosis testing, well-child clinics, prenatal and postnatal care, health screening, including hearing testing, vision testing, dental testing, developmental tests, and also for collection of specific specimens for prevention, diagnosis, and treatment of major communicable disease. And even in the young, in the maternal and child health, we do a great deal of cancer testing. Thank you very much for this opportunity to share this program with you. Yeah.
Excuse me, I'd like to interject for a moment. This is the primary moderator in Juneau. Does someone have an open mic on the line? There is a teleconference underway right now, and I hear intermittent noise.
Okay,
please check your mics.
Who follows you now?
Who follows me?
Okay. The next is the Alcohol and Drug Abuse and Mental Health Block Grant. Go ahead and please.
I'm Robert Marshall, Dr. Marshall, Division Director for Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities. As it turns out, the immediate block grant issue that confronts us now does not have much effect on the mental health programs throughout the state, with one notable exception. And that notable exception is the Anchorage Community Mental Health Center. The Anchorage Community Mental Health Center will be the recipient of block grant funds in the amount of $207,700 over the course of the state fiscal year 83. And these monies were originally available under the federal fiscal year 82 funding program. This, by a fairly complicated system of calculation, means in essence that the Anchorage Community Mental Health Center will have to absorb a substantial cut in funding in the immediate future, and that is state fiscal year 83, and their shortfall will be at or near the figure $381,500, which is indeed a significant curtailment of funds for that program. This part of my presentation is short, if not altogether sweet, and I think I could turn this over to someone from alcohol and drug abuse.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Marshall.
Yes, sir, I'm George Mundell, and I'm with the Office of Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. And the alcohol and drug abuse portion of the federal block grant required that 35% of the resources be allocated for alcoholism services, 35% for drug abuse services, and 30% could be used for as discretionary purposes, including an allocation for prevention. The Office of Alcoholism and Drug Abuse will co-mingle these federal block grant funds with state general funds in the FY83 grant and aid program. And so all the federal block grant funds will be included in the alcoholism and drug abuse grant components for FY83. To the maximum extent possible, programs which were formerly funded by the block grant will continue to exist in an effort to minimize the loss of services to Alaskans as the federal government reduces its participation in the alcoholism and drug abuse field. The block grant numbers that we received will be at approximately 70% of the levels that they were when they were formerly separate categorical and formula grant. Specific programs in training alcoholism and drug abuse program personnel and related health and social services providers will continue at a reduced level. Similar reductions will occur in the general grant program, as well as some reductions in the prevention and drug treatment areas. Included in the base for the alcoholism and drug abuse block grant in FY83 are the formerly separate federal programs. From the Federal Institute on Drug Abuse, we had the federal 409 funds, which went into the general grant program. Also from the Drug Abuse Institute, we had a specific 410 drug treatment program, a specific statewide prevention program, and training program. From the Alcoholism Institute, we had a general grant program with formula funds and a special training program. These six separate federal applications were received and administered and appropriated through the Office of Alcoholism and are all included in our base of numbers for FY83. In addition to that, there were two separate community programs that were rolled into our block grant. And those included a residential treatment program to the Cook Inlet Native Association and a comprehensive community services program for the city of Ketchikan. In FY83, funds for these projects will be awarded according to the related provisions of Alaska Statute 4737, that's the Uniform Alcoholism Act, 4730, the Grant and Aid Statute, 4429, which is our Drug Abuse Statute, and the Grant and Aid Regulations of the Department of Health and Social Services. I thank you.
Judy?
Thank you, Mr.
Thanks, Senator Parr. Commissioner Byrne, this is Judy Walker, Assistant Director, Division of Public Assistance. The Low Income Energy Assistance Program is an infant program in its third year, and I'm happy to say we're doing very well in serving the low-income households with their home energy fuel. This year, in addition to the department being able to serve the low-income households, six of the Native tribal organizations have joined with us, and they too have received block grants. The department has received about $7.5 million, The tribal organizations, about 3 million. The department will be serving approximately 8,500 households, and the Native corporations are hoping to serve between 5,000 and 6,000. That total population is 14,000 to 15,000 low-income households for fuel, oil, electricity, wood, any other home heating fuel needs they have. We are possibly considering using some of our money that we were awarded to give towards the weatherization program, which is also a critical need in Alaska. When an applicant household is found eligible for energy assistance, a credit is established with the energy vendor, and the payment goes directly to the household's oil dealer or electrical company. A person does not have to have a pass-through bill that can have an energy credit established towards their account to use through the winter season. Next year, we hope to continue the block grant funds and also continue to use the Native corporations in helping us reach all the low-income households throughout Alaska. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you all for explaining the block grants to the audience. I think now we're ready for any questions or comments from anyone on any of the stations. Do you have any particular order you want to take the stations in?
We can take them in this order. Just take them in down to the Anchorage.
Right.
Anchorage, do you have any participants at this time?
No, Tim, we do not have anyone at this time.
Barrow,
do you have any participants?
I have no participants at this time.
Bethel, do you have a participant?
No, I don't have any at this time.
Fairbanks, do you have a participant?
Fairbanks has no participants at this time.
Gaines, do you have any participants at this time? Haynes, were you trying to reach me? Homer, do you have a participant?
Homer does not have any participants.
Ketchcam.
Good morning. My name's Alvin Lee. I'm currently in Ketchikan, serving as a pharmacist with the Alaska Native Health Clinic, and am participating with the Ketchikan Volunteer Fire Department as their Emergency Medical Services Coordinator. I wanted to come here today to speak specifically in support of the block grant towards emergency medical services. In specific, here in the southeast, we have quite a few isolated communities, and the Emergency Medical Services Council serves as a kind of a coordinating center for all of our programs. I've been involved in emergency medical services for about the past 10 years, and that, along with my involvement with the remainder of the medical community and my capacity with the Native Health Service, has really demonstrated the need for a coordination center to provide continuity of care for emergency medicine. The population areas in the southeast are fairly isolated, and with the situation and rapid changing conditions of emergency medical care and registration and certification, it is imperative that we do have a central area that we can go to as a resource and also as an equipment supplier, as well as an educational source. And Southeast EMS Council has served this purpose specifically for us just recently in the past, and as we're trying to improve our emergency medical technician status, and they've been very helpful as far as being our current data source for new legislation and new standards of certification. Our experience with this certification has definitely persuaded me that a computer is necessary to keep all the information that's necessary to maintain certification, because it really is getting more and more complex as there are different levels of emergency training and certifications available. As far as supplying of training materials and other equipment that this area in the southeast is in need of, it would be nice to have.
May I respond to that, Senator Park? I would like to note that over the past several years, the federal funding for EMS has pretty well diminished each year, and the state has been picking that up on a regular basis. So at the present time, we have very little coming in for the EMS, for which we're very grateful. It's about 21,000, and it does indicate how the state has recognized that eventually feds probably would phase out, and this is one area where I think we're doing very well with state funding. I appreciate your concern, and this is Commissioner Byrne speaking. I just want you to know how much we appreciate the EMS people, the volunteers, and those very few who are receiving pay. Thank you.
Tim, this is Kelly up in the Barron's building. He called me, and they have some participants, but they can't, they can hear you, but they can't transmit. You might have to call Lena Point.
Okay, could you do that for me, Kelly?
Sure. Where's their number?
It's written on the, underneath the erasable board there.
Okay, I'll give a hunt.
Ms. Lee in Ketchikan, this is Charlie Parr. I just would like to say that when the Senate Health Committee did a lot of interim work on health this past fall, and the EMS got uniformly good comments all around the state. There was nobody who was dissatisfied with it. We still have a little ways to go to make it even better, but it certainly has a very good reputation, and certainly I don't think the legislature will have any compunction about funding it.
I appreciate your concern, Senator Parr. Thank you.
Kodiak, do you have any participants at this time?
No, we sure don't.
Okay, Kotzebue, do you have any participants? Okay. Matsu, do you have a participant at this time?
Yes, I'm Rose Palmquist from Anchorage and Wasilla. I'm very concerned, as older people are generally, over the Black Grant situation, not just the areas that you're considering this morning, especially those programs that were funded by such organizations as Action Agency, Community Services Administration, and so forth. Pertaining to the Preventive Health and Health Services Block Grant, which is before you, I noticed that although there is emphasis on young people, school-age population, there is no emphasis on the other neglected age group, which is the elderly. And when you're addressing health education to reduce risk or to reduce overuse of drugs and so forth, you have not only the school-age population, which has a certain aura about the use of drugs, but you also have an entirely different type of drug abuse, and that's prevalent among the elderly, and even a tendency to overprescribe by the physicians. And I believe that some of these funds should be go to agencies that will address the prevention of those types of preventable illnesses and situations that are prone to occur amongst the elderly. And this concludes my testimony. Thank you.
They wonder why that.
Hello, this is Lois Bergeson. Rose, I think I've met you. You've been in my office a few times. What we were addressing were only those monies that are used in block grant. They're a very small portion of the budget, and certainly the preventative services for everybody is being carried on by the Division of Health. As you know, we have a very active preventative services for the elderly in the cancer testing program, in the hypertension program, and all of the health education services are for everybody. These block grant ones, though, are a very small portion of the budget. The budget being, in the section of nursing, over $5 million, and the block grant may only be, and we don't know for sure, may only be $40,000. And that was why we had to address those specific groups. But health education and the health education funds for the risk groups, which are handed out on a contract basis on a competitive bid, will be for everybody. It's just that they do have some that are specifically allocated or specifically noted for the youth. And I hope this answers your question.
This is Charlie Parr, Commissioner.
Because the media, which especially in the printed field, that addresses the concerns of elderly have not mentioned these preventive type programs, and especially the dangers of over-prescriptions and the over-self-administration of drugs. The whole concept of things that people can do to improve their own wellness, their own health situation, it might be suggested that one statewide issue that goes to the largest segment of the older population, which is the senior voice, might be utilized in an effort to let people know that you do have a prevention program. I don't believe that this is commonly known. I visit many, many senior centers, and I deal with the elderly myself on a full-time basis. And if I wasn't aware of the services that were available, I can pretty well advise that what you say is already adequately funded, and I have some concerns about that, we aren't aware that the service is available.
Now let me come in if I may.
Yeah.
Ms. Palmquist, Charlie Parr, let me ask Commissioner Byrne if anyone on his staff wishes to address any specific educational program for seniors that is going on, especially as regards over-medication or over-prescription of drugs.
Senator Parr, I'm not aware of any that at the moment addresses that, except in the field of alcohol and drug abuse, and Mr. Lundell is going to speak to that in a moment. Let me just, however, state, this is Mr. Byrne speaking, that your recommendation that we put a column in the Senior Voice, I think, is excellent. And there's no reason why we can't get something to that document and just let everybody know what is available through them, to them, through the municipality, which does a great deal, and then through the Department of Health.
The hypertension program just is over here.
Lois just reminding me that the whole hypertension program addresses a number of the things that you're talking about. And with that, to answer Senator Parr's question, I'm going to ask George Mantell if he'll just talk about the overdosing or over-drug usage.
Yes, good morning, Rose. I did want to make you aware of one project in the area of prevention of drug abuse, and particularly prescription drug abuse, among older Alaskans, that the Alaska Council on the Prevention of Alcoholism and Drug Abuse is conducting. And it's a program entitled Keys to Healthy Aging. And it's sponsored with a little bit of state money and a special grant from the ARCO, the oil company in Anchorage. And the director of that agency is Barbara Hoffman. And they have a lady named Lou Ann Sims that's coordinating the Keys to Healthy Aging project. And their telephone number in Anchorage is 349-6602. If you would care to contact them to learn a little bit more about that program.
Yes, I was. I have been familiar with the work of Barbara Hoffman back some years ago when she addressed the question of alcohol abuse in the first issues of the Senior Voice. However, we haven't heard very much about that. Lou Ann Sims, I haven't met, but my information, which may be wrong, is that she's fairly new in the state. And so, naturally, we don't know very much about her. I think that communication should begin with the Older Alaskan Commission so that they become more involved. This is, after all, their field. And they should begin to address, and especially I understand that they're in the process of beginning to draft a long-term plan, and certainly there should be a section of long-term planning that relates to illness prevention in the area of the elderly. Anyway, my point was that this thing that we have here to look at, Preventive Health and Health Services Block Grant, did not address the important segment of keeping elderly healthier. And I know that Senator Parr is very well aware that if you keep us healthier, you're going to have to expend a lot less public funds to treat our acute illnesses that are partly a result of the need for education. And of course, what I'm expressing is that I feel that enough has not been done, and I'm going to importune at every opportunity that comes to my attention for more to be done in the field of prevention. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Palmquist. We do appreciate your testimony. Let's go to the next, please.
Petersburg, do you have any participants at this time?
No, we don't. Would it be possible to dial us off?
Certainly, I suppose. Kelly, can you take care of that?
What was that, Tim? I'm sorry.
Petersburg would like to be dialed off.
Okay, will do.
Can everyone stand by while we dial off Petersburg?
They can't just cut themselves off. Huh?
No, that would create a tone that would...
General causing tone.
Busy.
It goes R2-D2 again.
Yeah, Tim, quick question. When I dial off, do I hit the pound sign first?
Yeah, you'll have to do it again because it's still not off. Okay, moving right along. Sam Point, do you have any participants at this time? Okay. Seward, do you have a participant at this time? Kelly, are you reading me? Is anyone on the network reading me?
Kelly, this is Dee Soldat, and I hear you.
Oh, this is Tim Dee. Thank you.
Yeah.
You are next on my list. Do you have a participant at this time?
We have an observer at this time. Thank you.
Sitka, do you have a participant?
My name is Mac Armstrong. I'm the director of the Sitka Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. And I'd like to take this opportunity, requested this opportunity to testify in support of the idea of commingling the federal block grant funds with state general funds in this the FY83 grant and aid program. I think that in a time of rapidly diminishing resources in the field, which is also a time that is one of rapidly accelerating results, the ability to maintain at least some kind of presence, even a reduced presence in the field of training, particularly training of alcohol and drug abuse counselors, and also in supporting some of the recently formed residential programs, which are showing some really good results. That was my main purpose in asking to testify. My testimony will be short. Would also like to say, though, that I sort of decry the necessity. I think it's unpleasant that this year we're looking at reduced funding, but that's not the concern of this committee. And I'd like to thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. And this concludes my testimony.
Yeah, Tim, this is Kelly. LAFCOM just called me. They'd like a break in the action just for a moment and to see if Haynes can indeed transmit now.
Okay, all sites hold to see if we can get Haynes back online. Doesn't look like they're there yet. I'd like to go.
I'm going to go back to Mr. Sitka and Mr.
This is John Tabor, the Block Grant Administrator. We just wanted to thank Mr. Armstrong for his support for our plan to commingle the funds. We think that's the fairest way to deal with the fact that we do have dramatically declining total funds available from the federal government, and by combining it with the state funds, we think we can achieve the maximum impact. With regard to the further reductions that we've been experiencing, I'm happy to say that the indications are that for this year we won't be experiencing yet more in the way of federal reductions from the federal fiscal 82, at least not as the president's budget has been presented. So that is some modest glimmer of hope in an otherwise bleak financial picture for federal funding.
Thank you very much for testifying, Mr. Armstrong.
Are there any other participants at any site at this time?
I have one participant.
Go ahead, Pat, with your participant.
This is Ryan Erickson, representing a church that founded the Alaska Health Organization. I have a couple of questions. Under the federal block grant, what is the status of the Alaska Native organizations such as Tlingit and Haida Central Council and all of the Native Health Corporations? We understand tribal groups are not allowed to apply for block grants since it has been turned over to state. Also, what level of funding will WIC get from maternal child health block grants? That's the two questions.
This is John Tabor again. Thank you for the question. With respect to your first question, the federal block grant legislation, which was part of the Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act last August, created the option for direct funding of Native and Indian organizations in a number of the block grants. However, there was an additional proviso built into the health block grants that restricted the nature of the organizations or the number of organizations that could participate. And that proviso was that in order to be eligible for a block grant, a Native organization had to already be a recipient of federal funding under that program that was merged with the block. And as chance would have it, in the state of Alaska, that condition did not exist. We didn't have Native organizations who were already grantees, and therefore we didn't have Native organizations who could become direct block grant recipients under most of those programs. There were two exceptions, and that was in the alcohol and drug abuse program and in the low-income home energy assistance program. In addition, if the state had elected to pick up the primary care block, there was one Native organization that was a direct recipient there and could have received direct funding. And in fact, will not be precluded from going directly to the federal government in the future on primary care program, as much as the state does not intend to handle that particular block grant. So I would say that the answer to your question about Native organizations is that the state of Alaska had no role in determining who was eligible. It was simply a matter of our working with those organizations that were eligible to receive those funds. And we've done that, of course, in the energy assistance program, particularly where we have worked closely with Native organizations and have, in fact, turned back a portion of our own funding to permit the federal government to supplement those direct grants to Native organizations and thereby increase their ability to better serve their clients. That's really the best answer I can give to that part of your question. As far as the WIC program is concerned, there is still a lot of question about what the future of WIC is in relation to maternal and child health. The president has proposed that the WIC program be combined with the maternal and child health program into a new block grant called Services to Women, Infants, and Children. It's my understanding that that proposal, along with the rest of the president's budget, is under heavy fire and has encountered a lot of opposition in Washington, D.C., and indeed all around the country. And so it's really speculative now as to whether or not WIC will in fact be combined with maternal and child health. The funding for WIC, however, has also been proposed for reduction by approximately $300 million nationwide. That represents a 25% decrease. So here in the state of Alaska, federal funding is approximately $1 million, and I would anticipate, if the president's proposal is approved by Congress, that funding in state federal 1983, would be approximately $750,000, a 25% reduction in that particular program.
This is Charlie Parr. I'd like to come in, if I might, on one rather general comment on this subject. As you know, last year the WIC program was cut nationally by about 4%, and this year, as Mr. Tabor just said, the president has recommended cutting the total nationwide from $900 million to $600 million. There is a lot of attack on that. One of the more recent things was a statement by some pediatricians in the Boston area who looked at some children who had been dropped from the WIC programs and discovered there was some mild malnutrition in there. This is not necessarily a cause and effect relationship, and of course it's too small a group to make real generalizations from, but I believe that the Congress is not likely to take kindly to making that cut. It's just my guess what it's worth.
Any other participants in Wrangell?
Not at this time, thank you.
Thank you, Wrangell. At this time, are there any participants at any site around the network?
This is Haynes. Can you?
Haynes, you're breaking up. We can hear you. You came through once, but you're still breaking up.
Juno, this is Haynes. Are we coming through enough for someone to talk?
Well, you might have... Haynes, you're breaking up very badly. You're intermittent. We can hear you at times, but... You're coming in very badly.
Yeah, Tim, this is Kelly up in the Barron's Capitol building, and LASCOM just called me. They did all that they could do, and if you can't hear them, then I guess people won't be able to testify today.
Thank you, Kelly. I apologize to the participants in Haynes. It doesn't look like they'll be able to participate. You're breaking up very badly, and it would just be very frustrating for us down here.
Can Haynes hear you?
Yes.
Tell Haynes to call collect 465-4907. Sandy, you can take the call, and you can pass on to us what their questions are.
Okay, great. Haynes, if you would, you can call collect to 465-4907, which is the phone here in the Senate Hess offices, and we will pass your questions along to the group here, and we will answer your questions that way. So if you would do that, call collect to 465-4907, and we'll get your questions down and respond to them in a few moments.
They can hear you, right? So
right.
The responses can go back.
Tim, this is Barbara in Anchorage. Is it possible for you to make an off-net call to them?
Yeah, it should be possible. We cleared out Petersburg. Kelly, you might do that, too, if we can get their phone number. Haynes?
Go ahead and dial him off.
Haynes can hear you.
Okay, Haynes. Try to go ahead with your first participant.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. You're clear now.
Thanks. Looking, the sun's coming out too, so this little land from Haynes, I'm glad to see the names on the committee reviewing this. I know all of you question, and it's, I don't see any federal block grants, but since the federal government dropped travel for her to go to Anchorage on her eyes. She's had operations before. She went to Sitka and just came back. The specialist flew down there. And they want her back in Anchorage because the buildup in her eye, they could do surgery on it again. I don't have the money. It took quite a bit of her money even going down there.
She's on Medicaid.
And one thing and another. She did get a free ferry travel because that was finally instituted January this year, where she could get that. Could you answer on that one, please?
Oh, this is Lois Ferguson. It's my understanding then that your wife needs to go to Anchorage for further care. Is that right?
That's right. They want her there as soon as she can come up.
There is an eye
to build up in the inside so they can work on it again. It's right where they want it now. That's right.
There is some method for you to use. Some people that are on Medicaid are eligible for travel assistance. If you happen to know the public health nurse in your area, I'm sure that she can help you with this. She has all of the options outlined. It's, Joan Snyder. Thank you. I know her real well. It's Joan Snyder, and if you get in touch with her, she can get in touch with me, and we'll be sure that she's aware of all of the options for you to try and to use to travel into Anchorage. And then also it may be that she can contact the ANHS system and get them to give you permission to travel and pay for it. Okay?
I'm breaking up again.
Last fall I was up Social Security system in Juneau.
Yeah, Barbara, I'm trying to break through here again. Haynes, you're breaking up very badly again. We can't hear you.
Tim, why don't you try an off-net call to their number?
If we get the man's name.
Kelly, can you do that for me?
Yeah, do you know their phone number?
It's on the office sheet over my desk.
Okay.
Haynes, would you hold while we prepare an off-net call? Are there any other participants around the state at this time?
This is Fairbanks, and I have no participants, but a lady did drop off some written testimony that she would like transmitted down, so I would like to telecopy that when I get a chance, or when you have time.
Okay, well, perhaps we can do that later this afternoon.
Well, here it goes. You know, causing tones.
Off your announcement, please. Are you with us, Haynes?
We can't. It's a recorded deal, so we'll do wait till after the thing's done and then go ahead and talk.
Okay, I think it's done.
Okay, Ken. Okay, here's Leo.
Yes, my wife. My wife does not have Medicaid or Medicare. I checked with the Social Security office in Juneau last fall, and we was going to reapply for her Medicare coverage, where she paid so much out of her check, Social Security. And we hadn't did that yet. So that's the extent of my message. We do have a... Mr. Paddock here, that he said he don't have any questions now. Thank you.
Let me just mention. Mr. Land, even though you aren't on Medicaid, Lois Bergeson will have Joanne Snyder, the public health nurse, come over to your home and see if she can just discuss this with you and see if there's any way that we can help you. Thank you.
I know Joanne Snyder real well, and we'll go down and see her. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Land. Are there any other participants in Haynes? At this time, are there any other participants at any site around the state?
Anybody else wants to give anything? I think some people might want to go skiing or something, so why don't we close it out? There's nobody else there.
Would you like to close it off, or can I?
As far as I'm concerned, unless anybody else has anything you want to say.
Okay. Well, since I haven't heard any other voices out there, we'll conclude today's Senate Hiss hearing on federal block grants. I'd like to thank everyone for their participation and for their testimony, and I'll conclude so that we can clear that tone. Thank you all. Kelly, can you clear that?
Yeah, quick question, Ken. Do I hit the pound sign first when I'm clearing?
Yes, you do, Kelly.
Right? Pound sign, then 141, and are there any additional digits after that, Tim?
No, Kelly, you hit pound, then 341, or 321, or 331.
All right, thank you.
There you go. Thank you. I'd like to remind all sites with Omnicom to please forward their observer and participant list to LAXTC.
I think when Andrew was in the day that they were in the back of the service show, and that's the day that they have all the patients around. And,
Cook Inlet is incorporated. City of Kesselman, actually, we have a relationship with them.